Today's show is brought to you by AdvanceAutoParts.com. Save 20% off your first order at www.AdvanceAutoOffer.com/chickenduck. Enter promo code AAP20CAST for 20% savings.
Hello, welcome to Skype call testing service. After the beep, please record a message. Afterwards, your message will be played back to you.
This is Jim and Casey with Saturday's the Chicken Duck. Say hi, guys.
Hi, Case.
I went to work and got in a fight.
You listen to our podcast more than I have.
No, I don't. I didn't say you got plowed.
I just talk like I talk, and sometimes I'm just unfiltered. I don't mean to be.
Welcome back, everybody. Saturdays with Chicken Duck, episode 91. I don't know what 91 is in Spanish.
No, 91.
91. I would have got it, Sam. Joining us this week, Sam Cavallari from, what's the name of your podcast?
Yeah, might as well throw in a quick plug here. We are the Wrestling Dorks, but our podcast show is the Gorilla Press, and that's spelled like the... Gorilla, not the animal. The G-U-E-R-I-L-L-A.
Ooh, like the revolutionary. Like
Che Guevara.
Yes, yes. So you can search us. We have our own feed now. We're still with the Tapped Out Pod Network, but we're on our own feed, so look us up that way. You can follow our Twitter at Wrestling Dorks, and you can follow me if you're looking for Berks County High School football information at The Real SCAV.
Run that by me again? Maybe that's something about you that I might not know.
I write high school football stories, game stories on the, for the Reading Eagle.
Really?
Yeah.
How the fuck did I not know that?
You probably don't read the Eagle.
You don't follow him on Twitter?
No, I just meant how incredibly good I was at football growing up.
Well, I wasn't covering you in high school.
We're
the same age.
I just mean maybe like a retro piece.
I didn't think it was Oh, Jesus. I didn't think it was possible, but your head got bigger.
Oh, man. I'm only fucking busting your ass. All right. I'm sorry, Sammy. I want to intro the show. I forget your fucking the name of the show again.
What's
the name?
Gorillas. The Gorilla Press.
That's the name of your show?
Yes, The Gorilla Press with the Wrestling Dorks.
With the Wrestling Dorks.
Yeah.
So you're not... Your podcast is not called The Wrestling Dorks.
No, we changed it when we went to this network.
Just like that, you fucking changed it.
They made us, kind of. We can still be The Wrestling Dorks, but they wanted a different,
I don't know how I feel about that, conceding to somebody else's wishes like that with your intellectual property.
Yeah, we're still on Twitter at The Wrestling. We still own The Wrestling Dorks.
Why don't we just start our own fucking network and say to hell with it?
Because we're on the No Phony Podcast Network.
Yeah, but they don't. They're not going to tell him to change his name.
No,
fuck them.
All these podcast networks nowadays.
Yeah,
everybody. Christ, fucking Bobby Blazes is on podcast.
Bell to bell.
It's funny. Can't imagine he's got time to even talk to us, but he's got time to talk to us. Wait till you hear that, folks. Welcome back, everybody. Saturday's the Chicken Duck, episode 91. Joining me this week, Jeff Loper.
Hey.
Sam Cavallari from Gorilla Press with the Wrestling Dorks.
That's correct.
And like usual, Casey and myself.
Hi, buddy.
Hi, Case. Joining us this week on the phone is a former professional wrestler and author of Pin Me, Pay Me, Have Boots, Will Travel. I Kicked Out on 2, The Education of a Wrestler, and Season's F and Greetings, My Best Christmas Ever. Bobby Blaze Smedley, everybody. Welcome to Saturday's the Chicken Duck, man.
Hey, man, it's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on the program. Been looking forward to it.
Where are you calling in from, Bob?
I'm calling in from Ashland, Kentucky. Ashland. And it's the wasteland, man. I'm just down here in this little fucking coal mining where coal meets iron is what it's known as, Ashland, Kentucky.
Nice.
Is that where you grew up?
Yeah. I lived in Baltimore the first about 6 years of my life, and then I grew up here, predominantly here in Ashland. Of course, I've lived in other places throughout my wrestling career, but this is pretty much what I call home.
You still travel around at all?
Not as much as I'd like to. I go to a show here and there, something local, you know, 30, 45 minutes, an hour. Sometimes I go 2 or 3 hours away. But last big thing I did was WrestleCade last, that's down in North Carolina. That's probably one of my longer trips. I usually go to Lexington, Louisville, Kentucky, Charleston, West Virginia. Haven't been to Pittsburgh or Philly for a while. So, you know, usually 2 or 3 hours at the most. My body just can't take it. I'm not a night driver any longer. I found that out last February. So I have to have a driver after about 6 or 7. That could be evening or beers.
Night vision, man? Is that what the problem is? Yeah.
Did not realize it until February. I went to take my brother some food. He was working a double, and I was just hanging out. Man, I didn't realize, you know, it was like 6 o'clock. We was eating. I started leaving where his facility was at, and it's like 7:30. And, of course, you know, it gets dark and whatever in the winter. And, man, I got in the car like, what the fuck is going on, man? And then about a month went by, and I did the same thing. And I was like, holy shit, man, I can't see at night anymore.
Yeah, I had a good friend of mine who always swore by that he had it, and I never believed him until one night. Same damn thing happened to me, and I was like, holy shit. Like, yeah. That's what night vision is. Holy shit.
I'm the same way. As soon as it's nighttime, I'm pretty sure everybody has their fucking high beams on.
I hate driving in rain and at night.
See,
that's the worst.
That don't bother me. Almost every day for the past 3 months been raining for me, so it doesn't bother me. I have a nice long stretch of highway to drive straight on in the pouring fucking rain every day. So, last time you wrestled, man, how long ago?
Oh, man. 2004, I think. I may have done 2 shows in 2006. May I draw a blank when I want to say, I know I stopped in 2004. I stopped into it, but it seemed like I'd done 2 shows in 2006. I might have to double check that, but yeah, it was a very limited between 2004 and 2006. So I was getting my master's degree, and I think I went and done 2 shows for that, one in West Virginia and one in Ohio. Man, that's just a blur of that last little bit right there for me, to be quite honest with you.
What's the, what do you got your master's in, man? That's fucking impressive.
Organizational communications.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Believe it or not, with this old country accent. But yeah, I went back. I dropped out of school at 21 because I knew everything at 21. You know that, right?
Oh, hey.
And, I dropped out at 21 because I knew every fucking thing. Because I wanted to be a professional wrestler. That's the truth. And I really did. I mean, obviously didn't know anything. You know that. But I dropped out because I wanted to be involved in professional wrestling. I did. And then I went back as an older student. And believe it or not, the school I went to was Ohio University. It was on quarters at the time in Ohio. So the first day I went back at the age of 39 was April Fool's Day. And that was the first paper I wrote for college. So I'd been out for however long that is, due to math, between 21 and 39.
Long 18 years, man.
I'm not a math man, obviously. But so I wrote that first paper, April Fool's Day. What a great day to return back to college, you know, for someone who knew everything. And I finished that last year. I only had 1 year left, and I liked it so much, I did some online courses and finished my master's degree at Duquesne in Pittsburgh.
Oh, shit.
So, yeah, and that's in organizational communications.
That's pretty awesome, man.
Thank you. I'm really proud of that. So, yeah, because I did it as an older student, you know.
I had about eight or nine credits or classes left to take, and I still never going back because I got a decent job and I'm just lazy. But
fucking inspiration. You know, honestly, man. I was doing much better. It seemed like financially, of course, the whole damn country's been crazy. And I'm not going to go into all that or anything, but I made a lot more money, you know, in wrestling than anything I'd done outside of wrestling. And I made more without my degree than I did with my degree, it seems. But I did it for a personal reason, to finish that last little bit. Of course, I'd never discourage anyone from finishing their education or beginning one, for that matter. But the bottom line is, man, you know, if you got a good job and you like what you're doing, or you love what you're doing, and you like the people you're around and stuff, that's what's important. It really is. Life is the best teacher there is, man. I learned so much more outside the classroom than I ever did inside the classroom. You could tell me about any of the countries I've been to or any of the states I've been through, for that matter, in some kind of a history or a civics class or something. But you know what? I learned it out there on the road so much. And so honestly, when I went back, I'm not bragging or anything, I've read a lot because I've always been I'm an avid reader. But I just, you know, when you're out there learning it and living it, it's so much better than when you're in a textbook. So when I went back, of course, I didn't study. I mean, obviously I did because I enjoyed the reading part. But a lot of times I just knew it because I equated it to something in life, you know, so good. It's okay. You're what, 8 credits away or 18. What'd you say? Don't sweat it. You got a good job. You love what you're doing. Fuck, man.
Yeah, I think
you'll finish it, you know?
I think the one-year-old kid's going to throw a wrench in it. I think that's going to slow the education down to a halt for a couple more years, too.
There you go.
I was thinking
about
it. Hey,
enjoy that
back,
time, but... by the way. I've got one to be 21. It's Wednesday, man.
That's awesome.
So I'm not wishing those next 20 years past you real fast.
No.
Because that's a whole lifetime, but good for you, man. Enjoy that one-year-old right now, believe me.
Well, I'm absolutely enjoying him.
Absolutely. As you can tell, I'm easygoing. I like to talk, you know, whatever. Ask me whatever. I'm pretty much an open book. I've written 2 of them, obviously, so there's a lot of stuff in those. I've written, of course, a couple of e-books, like you mentioned, Seasons, Up, and Greetings.
Yeah, what's that?
My Best Christmas Over. That's just an e-book. But I enjoyed the fuck of it because it's all true. You know, most of the stuff, you know, believe nothing you hear and only half of what you see. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, that Seasons, Up, and Greetings, man, that was my best Christmas ever. It's just a fucking blast. But so ask me whatever, man. Let's have a good time with it. And I appreciate you guys having me on the show. Like I said, been looking forward to it for a while.
All right, Bobby. So I have a question for you. This is Sammy, yes, sir, Sam. Whatever you like to call me. Why professional wrestling? What was the reason?
Oh, man, I was just a lifelong fan, quite honestly. I enjoyed it. I watched it as a young kid. I watched the old WWF when I was in Baltimore as a young, you know, like young man, like a young boy, should say, not young man. Had an aunt that watched it, you know, big old, probably at the time in one of the big console TVs, but probably at the time, I don't know what, 13, 19 inches, whatever those were back in the day. So floor model or whatever. And then I moved to Kentucky, like I said, and about 3 or 4 years went by. My brother he come running outside on a Saturday morning and said, man, you got to see it. He's 4 years younger than me. So he'd have been about the age I was watching, like 6. But anyway, long story short, he ran out there and said, you got to come here and see this on TV. And I went in. We had little TV, black and white, probably, honestly, a 13-inch or 19-inch. I don't know. But anyway, I said, man, that's professional wrestling. He didn't know what it was. And I was like, oh, yeah, well, of course, we believe it's real.
I thought it was real until I was like at least 14, Bobby. So that's nothing wrong with that. Like that broke my heart one day.
Everybody thinks it's real.
It's like finding out Santa Claus was fake.
I still
want
to believe, man. That's my gimmick. I still want to believe. I used to say me and Cornette and Bobby Eaton were the last 3 to ever fucking believe, but it might be down to me and Bobby. I think Cornette gave up on it. I don't know if you listen to his podcast, but no, it's on life support pro wrestling. I don't use that other word. I don't kiss my mother with that one word, you know, the F word. I don't, you know, but no. So anyway, back to the story. While wrestling, and then I watched as a fan. It was the old Memphis tape, actually. And one day I was walking by the TV, about 15 years old, and I was watching the show, and I was like, man, that's what I want to be when I grow up. Because to me, you know, a professional wrestler is just a bad motherfucker. You know, you got them big guys, you know, with the bleached blondes and the tan bodies. And I was like, damn, man, that, you know, and I just was a fan, and I started setting some goals. And like I said, so between 15 and 18, 19 years old, I played a lot of basketball, always athletic and stuff. But at 21, I said, fuck, man, this education, I know it all. I don't need these books. I don't need this, need that. I've been working out. I've gotten bigger and stronger. I didn't know it was a fucking work, you know, but and it was harder to get into back then. But by God, I was going to be a professional wrestler. And that's what I set out to do, you know. I just loved it. I loved the business. I didn't know it was a business. I mean, I knew it was a business, but I didn't know to what extent. But I was just a fan, and I just enjoyed the fuck out of it, man, watching it, you know.
Who were some of the people that you were looking up to at that?
Yeah,
like when you first got in.
I remember that when I walked by the TV, that was Handsome Jimmy Valiant. He hadn't even been the Boogeyman yet. And it was Jerry Lawler, and he was calling Lawler out on a carpet. And but my best, my favorite was Terry Funk when he come through Memphis. I was like, oh shit, who's this guy? You know, this crazy interview. I always cheer for the heels anyway, But yeah, Terry Funk was an early influence. You know, obviously Jerry Lawler and Dundee and that Memphis group, but Hanson, Jimmy Vane. But, you know, as I got older, of course, those changed. But, you know, it's no secret. Most people know I'm a Terry Funk fan. When I saw Paradise Alley in like 1978, I was like, oh, fuck, Frankie the Thumper, you know, he just kicked everyone's ass. And so, yeah, those guys were earlier influences just because that's who I saw on TV. And, of course, to me, and probably not unlike today, you know, with these kids today, man, you're on TV, you're a huge fucking star, you know. And to me, that was the closest I can get to a Hollywood or TV star, if you will, professional wrestlers. Because, you know, I eventually – starting about the age 12, I started going to shows, and I still go to them today, as mentioned. I went to a couple shows last month. I went to their shows about 45 minutes from my home in any given direction, and, you know, independent shows, and a couple of them are really good, and I admire the guys for doing it, but I enjoy it. And if sometimes some of the guys I used to work with, you know, are come through still, some of the younger guys, I think, you know, I enjoy going back and seeing them, Just a still a fan of pro wrestling, you know. So I'm a mark. What are you going to do? What are you going to say? You know, I want to believe.
Bobby, you were trained by the Malenkos. How did you end up hooking up with Dean Malenko, the man of 1,000 holds?
Yeah. So I had about someone broke me in. I had my first match September 11th, 1988. And no one really smarted me up, though. It beat the fuck out of each other kind of thing. And as I'd later find out, as Malenko told me, he said, Bobby, those guys up in Kentucky and West Virginia and Tennessee, God bless them, they don't know how to wrestle. All they want to do is poke each other in the eyes and kick and punch and hit each other. And he goes, if you stick with me, just forget everything you think you know about professional wrestling and let me start with square one, we'll have a deal. And I shook his hand. That was our deal. The way it came about, I was actually, like I said, I had about probably 12 to 15 matches without being really smartened up to anything. I was always curious why everyone called me Mark. I'd get ready to get in a ring, and they'd say, come on in, Mark. And I'd be like, oh, it's Bobby, by the way. And then I'd be in a locker room, and they'd say, hey, Mark, can you care to do it? And I'm like, what the? You know, I didn't know. And that's a straight shoot. So I was at this show, though. How I got hooked up with the Malenkos was this. I'd been writing a lot of promoters and trainers and just trying to get my foot in the door. And, of course, back then it was snail mail. I hadn't returned any phone calls, or they hadn't been returned to me, I should say. And I was at this show, and the main event was Buddy Landell. And I wish I could tell you who the other person was, but I can't because he didn't show up. And I had worked or fought or what do you want to call it earlier in the show, but I was a heel under a mask, or as a hood, I should say. And I got a little story about why masked men don't get laid, and that's in Pin Me, Pay Me, but they do, I found out. But anyway, Hector Guerrero was Lasertron, and Handsome, which was Boogie Woogie, Jimmy Valiant, were the baby faces. And so someone didn't show up, and Buddy Landell said, put that boy right there with me. And I'd already, you know, I had, you know, long blonde hair underneath the mask here, and I had a shirt on. I looked pretty good at the time. And so Buddy and I went out there, and he said, just listen to me. And I watched, and of course, this was back, it was an NWA show, actually. I had a good promoter, it was over in Eastern Kentucky. And I realized, holy fuck, Dave Early was touching each other, and they was looking, and I was smart. I was like, what, this is something more to this. And I started talking to Buddy, and he's like, dude, you gotta get trained, you gotta do this, that. And during that intern time, about 3 or 4 months went by, someone from the Malenko school got a hold of me. And that was in December of 88. And by May of 89, I packed my bags and moved to Florida and had that deal I just now talked about where Professor Boris Malenko took me under his wing. I started off from square one, peg one, hole one, whatever you want to call it, man. And about 4 months, of course, I picked up really good because I was athletic. And I had done some amateur wrestling, and I had always, unfortunately, I had been in fights and this and that and those type things. But after about 4 months, you know, I had a couple, you know, training matches and this and that. Dean had been going to Japan quite a bit, and he came back to the school and started taking over mine and a couple other guys' instruction. And it was just one of the greatest learning experiences I ever had because, first of all, Malenko took me under his wing, and second of all, I realized how good Dean Malenko was. I knew at the time him and his brother Joe was going to Japan quite a bit. And of course, I watched all those Japanese tapes where I was at the camp and living down in Florida and, you know, going to the school 4 days a week, two to three, 4 hours a day every Saturday, Sunday, and then it was Tuesday and Wednesdays. And the more you was free, as far as time wise, whatever you paid per week, whether you went one time per week or all four times, that was up to you. And man, I'd done things from, you know, selling t-shirts to suntan lotion to fucking delivering pizzas. But I tried to get, then I eventually got a job with the guy that worked around my wrestling schedule. So I was there every time the damn doors opened. But Dean, man, there was so many things to be learned from Dean. And one of the first things I remember, I was in a ring with a guy, the guy was trying to do like a high knee lift, and I was feeding him, and he was doing it wrong or something. Anyway, Dean was, you know, watching. This was the very first day, you know, he agreed to take me under his wing, and I was shaking. I was shaking just talking to Dean in the middle of the ring, and this other guy was too. And it's Dean Malenko, you know, and Dean looked at me. He goes, "Hey, Bobby," he goes, "I'm the least person that you should be afraid of or nervous with. I've got, think about this, I've got more experience than anyone here. I'm not going to hurt you. Just bend over and then turn your head this way." And he was showing the other guy how to do knee lift. He was telling me how to protect myself. And I realized then that, you know, hey, this is a good experience, you know, because he took the time to say, "I'm the one here least likely it's going to hurt you. I've got the most experience here." And from that moment on, Dean and I just clicked, man. We had a really good relationship in and out of the ring. He took me to a lot of shows. And Larry didn't, you know, his dad, Mr. Malenko, or Larry, Professor, whatever, he didn't travel a lot. He was about my age now. That was a thing. I think he's actually a couple years older than I am now. But he didn't go to a lot of shows at that time. He went to the student shows, and he went to the camp. But it was a great experience, man. Then eventually Joe was going to Japan. Carl Gotch was down there, and they had a shoot fight group that done some shows, and they done Sunday training. So he would come by, and Jody, the older Malenko, he would come by sometime on Sundays. And very fortunately, I'm glad I didn't do that. Believe me, I'm not a shoot fighter, nothing like that. But I'm just saying, Joe started coming back. He had tuned up for Japan, so he'd come by every once in a while on a Sunday. And one Sunday, Malenko asked me and my partner, a guy that had been training with me, to stick around. He wanted me to work with Dean and Joe. They was tuning up for a Japanese tour. And that was the first time I got in a ring with Joe. And, man, of course, I was nervous again, but it was just five people in the building. It was Professor Malenko, me and a guy named Rico against Joe and Dean Malenko. And we just worked out spots and worked in out of holds. Just get some ring rust off for Joe, really. But, man, what a fucking, you know, probably stayed about an hour extra. But that whole hour, it meant so much to be, you know, just in a ring with such talented, some of the best craftsman in a business. And that's the thing about Dean Malenko. I think he's one of the most underrated professional wrestlers ever, because it took him such a long time. He was making money in Japan. He had been to Mexico and Puerto Rico and those places. We eventually done a tour together over in Australia back in 93, but that hadn't happened yet this time. But you know, I knew he was well traveled, and I knew he was a craftsman. That's the best word to put with it. He could wrestle and shoot and hook you, and it was a great learning experience, man.
Bobby, when you say Japan, they were getting ready for Japan, do you mean like what? When I think of Japanese wrestling, I think of like crazy, like Terry Funk and those dudes like cutting each other's fucking ears off with barbed wire and that kind of nonsense.
Like, no, back then, like I think it was 88, 89, they were working for All Japan. Dean eventually jumped to New Japan, but at the time they were working All Japan. They were working with Hanson, the Funks. You know, they was working with all those guys, Spivey, the bigger guys. But the Malenkos went over there for, they were actually all Asian tag team champions at one time. They had match of the year, I think it was 89, against the British Bulldogs, according to the sheets. You know, if you ever get a chance to watch that match, it is on YouTube. It's the British Bulldogs against Dean and Joe Malenko. They also had a, in Tokyo at the Egg Dome, they had the UWF, and it wasn't the old WASP territory. It was the it was one of the first earlier, I won't say one of the first, but it was Fujiwara and Carl Gotch. They put on a big show for shoot fighting is what it was. It was UWF shoot fighting. I think they drew over 60,000 people back in 89 at the and you can fact check some of that stuff, but that's what they was doing on Sundays. Was the Fujiwara had a group, I guess, and it was UWF that Gotch was training some of the boys to take over for that. And then eventually Dean went, and Joe was the world junior heavyweight title over there. He put that on him about 89-90. But then Dean eventually jumped to New Japan. So you're talking about late 80s, early 90s. But I think around maybe 93, 94, maybe that's when you're talking, when Funk went back over and was doing, I guess, some of what Anoki maybe, or no shit, who was it? Some of the barbed wire stuff. I know he's doing those Cactus Jack and that was. I'm drawing a blank on a fucking hardcore.
Yeah, but they were specific like Japanese death matches, right? Yeah, they weren't like a.
It wasn't a normal thing.
A whole show like like an ECW show or CZW.
Well, like some of that shit, like Sabu and shit, they were like fucking beating each other up with barbed wire bats.
They went for FMW, Frontier Martial Arts, because we done some co-shows with them when I went over there back over with Michinoku. But early on, I know Sabu and him and Mike Awesome, some of the guys from Florida, they was working for FMW, which was Frontier Martial Arts. I don't know if that's who Funk went over for when he was doing that kind of stuff. I know he wasn't, you know, doing that hardcore stuff with when he was with, you know, All Japan for all those years, you know. So different time period, I guess.
Let's go to the early 90s. I know you you did some matches with the WWF. Yeah. Was it basically, you know, they were in town either for a TV shoot or and they needed, you know, some guys to, you know, put some of the superstars over, or how'd you get hooked up with that?
Well, I'd been trained and I traveled, and I had been up in Canada for about 16 weeks. The very first territory I worked for was out in out of Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada. We went to Nova Scotia and Prince Edward Island. We did like 7 days a week, and I did that for like 16 weeks and got a lot of great experience. And they do a season up there. And when hockey comes, you know, and it gets cold and all that, they just shut wrestling down for the winter. So I was coming home, and I had every intention of going to Florida in December. And I got home in early October. What happened was some of my buddies, the Malenkos, they had sent guys up for WCW and also WWF at the time to do, you know, jobs, enhancement, talent, whatever you want to call it. And so I was talking to one of my buddies, and he told me, he said, man, the guy I'd been in Canada with, actually, so I knew he was really good. And, you know, you're still learning the business. You're paying your dues. You're learning your craft, whatever. And he said, hey, man, I just done some TV for WWF down here in Florida, and they paid pretty good if they come to your area. Go ahead and do it, man. He said, they just won't let you use your real name. And or they won't let you use your gimmick name. You know, you'll just be putting guys over, doing a job, basically. And I said, oh, okay. And I knew I had like 2 months, and I didn't have any. I had a couple little shows around here, I'm sure, but nothing, you know, bill paying wise. And so I heard the WWF was coming to the Huntington Civic Center, which is about 20 minutes from my house over in West Virginia. And I went up there, and they had already told me to ask for JJ. So I went up there, asked for JJ, and I went in and spoke to him, told him who I was. And he said, hey, you know, hold on, we might have something for you. Just stick around. So, yeah, that's what happened. I hung out in the back, and I was sitting on a table, and Roddy Piper walked by. And that's when Flair was in WWF. And I was sitting on a table just waiting around. They didn't put up a board or anything like that. And Piper walked by, and he said, hey, kid, who you working? And I was like, you know, looked around like, hey, you talking to me kind of thing, you know. And so I worked a match with Roddy Piper, and from that, and I'll come back to that story in a second. But yeah, what happened was I worked Piper, and they ended up putting me on a show, and they worked Piper. They paid me really good. I was like, holy fuck, you know, I've been up in Canada making this for a week, and they give me this, and they got to me in cash, and I was like, holy shit. But they said, you know, we got some shows coming up. Where do you live? I told them, in Kentucky. And I said, oh, you know, we border like six states, but you know, who the fuck thinks about that? They're like, oh, we're going to be in Indiana. Would you like to come out there? And I was like, well, yeah. You know, so I ended up going over to Indiana and Ohio and doing some shows. And I talked to them after those shows, and they said, hey, at that time I had already planned on, like I said, had planned on going to Florida in December, which I did. But prior to those TV tapings I'd done, they said, hey, we're going to be in Florida next month. Or, you know, you, and I said, hey, I'll be in Florida next month. And I've done a couple more. I've done fucking Daytona Beach and Fort Myers. And, you know, that's what happened with the Piper deal. He just needed someone. He said, you look like Ric Flair. Yeah, I got an idea. And him and I, he took me to a back bathroom. He said, I got a great idea. Would you like to do this? And I'm like, yeah, and whatever. And he come back with Ric Flair, and he said, hey, kid, this is what we're going to do. Would you, you know, and I was like, man, whatever. And, of course, they use Bobby Smedley. You can't use your gimmick, because I had some stuff that was different than what I wore on the TVs. But I guess I've done 7, 8 of them, whatever it was. And people was like, I should say, there was people I knew that would say, oh, man, I wouldn't go on TV and do this. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? I would do it today, and I'm an old man. I'd be like, you know, Vince, where do you want me to sign at? You want me to fucking prick my finger or cut my wrist and sign in blood? What do you, you know?
You want to take a spear from Roman Reigns?
Are you kidding me? You get to go to, you know, you're out here working an independent show. You're probably out all your gas money and your food money and this and that. This is, of course, years ago. I'm still telling you. And I'm like, they're fucking... When I went to Indiana in Ohio, I'm like, I drove out there and they paid for my gas. They gave me money for a hotel and I got catering for, you know, food. And then you're going to fucking pay me to do this, something I love doing. Are you fucking kidding me? How lucky am I?
What were they paying back then? Just around approximately for, you know, for you to do a, you know, a TV show for them.
What is it?
What approximately were they? They paying for, you know, for a TV show.
It was like $150, man. Just like when I done Huntington, I got $350 and I was 20 minutes from home. When I went to Indiana, they paid me $350 for both nights just for the match. This is back in 91? Yeah.
Right.
And
so
it was like $350. And then I got, they asked me what hotel expenses were. I told them for the couple of nights for that. And I said, I'm 5 hours from home, you know? And so, yeah, here's the thing. I would have kept doing that. I went to Florida. I'd done those two shows in January and they paid me pretty good. And I had already planned on moving down, or like I said, I was moving back to the Tampa area. And, believe it or not, man, the way the world works sometimes, it was, February of 92. And some guys had already asked me, you know, hey, you want to do next month, which would have been March. They said, would you want to do, you know, a couple more TV tapings? And it was up in, Northern, out there in the panhandle part of Florida for a couple day run. And I'd already planned on riding up a couple guys from Malenko's and doing the same thing. But what happened was I was sitting there and I don't know where it's the way the wrestling world works. Stick around at 15 minutes and this thing will change on you. Dude, I went down to the fucking Home Shopping Network and filled out an application and took a little 5-minute listening and typing test. And they was going to start you off like at $8 an hour or something, a fucking, you know, operators be standing by type thing. And it was a rainy fucking Tuesday morning, and I was like, well, fuck, I got some work lined up. Maybe if they call me. You know, at the meantime, I was going to go back to school that evening and train. I'd already been to the gym. Phone rings, man, and I'm thinking, fuck, that's quick, thinking it's a Home Shopping Network. And it was Ron Starr called me from Atlanta. He said, you want to go to South Africa? And I was like, what? And he goes, yeah, plane leaves tomorrow. It's a 21-day tour. The fucking ticket will be there. It's $800 a week. And I was like, you know, are you fucking kidding me? He's like, no. And I end up the Home Shopping Network. I don't know if they called or not. I immediately called Malenko's, a couple of guys I planned on flat WWF show. I was like, guys, I can't take that booking. I'm out of town. And I called the WWF office and I said, hey, keep me noted in the future. But they said, we don't even have you on the books. And I was like, okay, I just was checking in like I had a job or something. But someone told me at the Titan Towers or whatever they fucking were back then, they were like, who is this? What are you talking about? Like, well, I was supposed to do these shows like March 1st and 2nd. Hey, we don't know who the fuck you are. Fuck off. So I was like, well, okay. And I called the guys and said, I'm not riding up with you guys. Whatever, you know.
But Piper didn't remember you.
Back, man, just the shit like that happened all the time. You'd get a booking here or there and something to hold you over, man. So
do you have any stories? You said when you were, you know, in WWF for that short period of time, did you hit the bars with Flair afterwards?
No, you know, the thing is I worked in WCW for 3 years with Flair. He was there those years. And no, man, and I see, you know, Flair all the time. You know, I see him at Universal tapings. I see him at TV tapings, whatever. But no, I didn't, a lot of, even in WCW, the years I were there, man, everyone just kind of, I don't know if it's segregate yourself, but everyone just kind of goes, you go off a lot of times with people you know and you hang out with people you know. You know what I'm saying? Your own circle, a clique of friends or whatever. So I didn't like, even if I stayed in the same hotel, a lot of times if I went to the bar, man, I'd be at my table with whoever and people would be at their, you know what I'm saying? People, you disassociate with, you know, married guys associate, married guys, you know, single guys associate, drinkers and drug, you know, whoever it is, you pretty much know, you know what I'm saying, you kind of go your own way, man. And a lot of times you get to, like, Orlando, we'd go down there for 10 or 12 days for the TV taping for Worldwide. You know, you stay at one hotel and there might be 5 or 10 guys staying in that hotel or 20, but you just do your own thing, man. That was just me. And I never was like, you know, if I saw guys at a bar, of course I always spoke to them and was professional and courteous and those type things. But I didn't go out and say, oh, man, I'm getting to hang out with Ric Flair today. You know what I'm saying? I'd see him at the show, and I'd shake his hand and thank him or whatever, and that was that, you know. Everyone had their own cliques, if you will. I hate to use that word, but that's what it is, you know. You guys you've worked with, I mean, I've sat down to dinner with, you know, lots of time. I love Barbarian and fucking Haku and them guys, you know, you go and we sit down and have a nice dinner when we was in Orlando or something. And at that point, all the crazy stories were out of the way for those guys. They were family men at the time. So we sit down and we'd have a nice meal and just talk and BS. And you know, a lot of time I see Bobby Eaton or Brad Armstrong and the Armstrong brothers and this guys that I hung out with, you know,
so
pretty much on a regular.
I know you kind of worked pretty much. You worked big men and small men. I know you had some matches. Scott Steiner. I was gonna say who was
I don't know if you call that a match.
Yeah. Who was the stiffest guy you worked with in the ring?
I'll tell you what happened on that match real quickly. I actually flew home on a Monday and I was sitting there watching Nitro or whatever it was and they flew me back out on Tuesday. I was like, this is crazy. I just left Atlanta. Well, they flew me back down the very next day to do a TV in Atlanta. Well, actually flew to Atlanta, but did it in Rome, Georgia. Well, they flew me home on Wednesday. I get home on Wednesday. It called me like at 10 o'clock at night. And what it was, they said, we need someone to be on Thunder tomorrow night. And it's to set up. I knew the deal a lot of times before I went into it because I had a contract with them. And I always talked to them and knew my position before or prior to, you know, what they asked me to do. But they called me at Paul Orndorff and he said, Bobby, we need you to. And I'm like, you know, I just flew here. Their travel was fucked up in WCW as far as like booking, put you here, get an airline ticket. I got so many e-tickets. They're like $2,200. I'm like, you can get this flight for like $400 if you fucking get it. Well, I wasn't paying it. I'm just saying that's how messed up the travel was back then.
Ted Turner's
on that Steiner thing, said, hey, we need someone to go out there. We're going to do a TV match on Thunder. And basically, it's a hospitalization pay-per-view match that he's getting ready to do with DDP. We need someone to come out here and put Steiner over. And I'm like, yeah. And I got to Salt Lake. And the whole deal was, you know, like he was getting ready to go on a pay-per-view that Sunday. And they wanted to know if he'd put me on a stretcher. And I don't know what they showed on TV and whatnot, but basically that's what happened. And I'd always got along with Scott, and Rick was always real good to me. But Scott, I was like, man, I'm not even taking my shirt off, brother. You know, I go, whatever you all do, that's fine with me. Just take care of me. And he did, you know, he took care of me. Great detail. I remember that match, but yeah, it looked like he beat the dog shit out of me, but man, you know, not to give anything away, I mean, it's been so many fucking years ago now, but I knew when the elbows were coming to the back of the head to turn my fucking head, so he's hitting me in the back, not in the fucking face, you know what I'm saying? I ain't stupid. But yeah, I worked with like Juventud. I mean, give me a break. It's no different than Steiner beat the shit out of me in any given minute if he wanted to. Same thing with Hoovy. I'm sitting there going, I'm like 230 pounds. This guy's a buck. I used to tell him and Ray, I'd say, I look at them guys joking around. I said, my oldest son at the time was 9. I was like, you know, I said, fuck you guys, little Mexicans. I said, my fucking 9-year-old's bigger than you little fuckers. You know, so it's just, you know, it's just working though. So when I went out there with Hoovy too, you know, you got a guy like to me, like a buck 35, what I'm like, I fucking throw this guy anywhere I want, beat the fuck, but I wouldn't do that. You know, how unprofessional would that be when someone like that or fucking Goldberg or someone might go out and do that to me, you know what I'm saying? So same thing with Piper. What if Piper would have went out there and really took advantage of me? But no, he had me call a match, as brief as it was, put him over, and that's that. Hit me with the chair as I'm going over the top rope. He's like, I'll just barely brush you. Because he didn't, I said, no, you can hit me with it if you want. Because he didn't want to hit me with it. I'm swinging at you. And I said, I've been up in Canada, man. I told him, I said, I've been getting smoked with chairs on a regular. I said, just as you come at me, I'll go over the top. He said, you got it, pal. And I mean, it's all professional. And fortunately for me, that's the way I conducted my business.
Just another day in the life.
Yeah, another day in the office. That's it, man. What am I going to say? I went to work and got in a fight.
So how did you end up in Japan, the 7 tours in Japan?
Michinoku Pro, Willie Wilkinson Jr., he had been a Malenko student as well. He had been living over the town for like 5 years. And I had, of course, talked to Dory and Terry Funk about going to All Japan, which, you know, I that wasn't on the table. I think Dory had just stopped booking for him for a while. I wanted to go there. I had sent off information to different companies through the years, and I got a call with Willie, was over there, and he was kind of a policeman for Michinoku Pro. And like I said, he was living there at the time, and he was like, they had brought in some smaller Americans, Sasuke, and Sasuke called me. And I had sent off videotape, of course, and pictures and stuff. And I tell you, I didn't know this until the second tour. But the first tour I got there, and Willie wasn't there. He had wanted to keep, he liked keeping an American on every tour. So the first tour I went, or a Mexican, and they always brought two Mexican wrestlers and two Americans on about every tour at the time. And the first tour I was there, Willie had already, he came home. He had taken a vacation, so he was back in the States. But he told me about one of the Mexican guys that'd take care of me, who the Japanese interpreter was, and this and that. And I went over and done a 3-week tour. And I got over, and that first night, they gave me a young boy, and they said, here, what you, you know, give him 7-8 minutes and you go over. And went out there and did it. But anyway, the second tour, I found out what happened, where I had sent my videotape over and my pictures and stuff. We had a day off, and Willie and I was out into the town, Iwate, where we was, place we were staying at was a hotel. We was getting something to eat. He took me by the office, and he said, you know how you got over here, don't you? And I said, well, yeah, you fucking, you know, helped me get over. He said, no, you remember that tape? And I was like, yeah. He goes, so we walked over by the Michinoku office where Sasuke had an office, because I did my business through Great Sasuke. Willie stayed out without the contracts and all that. He just said, here's a starting pay, ask for this and see what they give you. And it worked out real good. But anyway, he said, that tape you sent, Sasuke saw you taking a power bomb off the top rope. And I had taken, in 93, I'd taken 4 nights in a row, a powerbomb from Chris Candido for the Thanksgiving Thunder tours for Smoky Mountain Wrestling. And I had put that at the beginning of my promo tape and at the end of it. And it had like 5 minutes in between with some music and, you know, just like you do it back in the day, some matches of me selling a couple of little quick promos and then out of there. But I put that at the beginning and at the end, about a 30-second clip with about the last 10 seconds of each of it, with that power bomb. And he said, man, Sasuke saw that. He come up out of his chair. He said, that guy right there, he's crazy. Get him here, Willie, get him. Because I was just going through tapes to Willie saying, you know, here's some American guys I'd like to bring over. And when he saw that, he said, you know, he knew. So once I was there for that first tour, Sasuke was like, you know, I liked you. I'd like to have you back. And I went back for another tour, and then it just kept going. And as soon as my WCW contract was over, as one of the first calls I made, he said, you know, hey, he returned my call. He's like, hey, Bobby, you know, Masa, love to have you back. When can you come? And I said, as soon as you can get me a ticket. And I think I finished up in September of that year with WCW, and I was back in Japan like very first of November. I remember going back over for like another 6 weeks in November through December of that year, you know, so. Had a good relationship with him, I guess the main thing. You got to, once you get over there, you're the one that has to fucking do your own business, you know. But that's how I got in with a guy named Willie Wilkinson Jr. And Sasuke was just always good to me. You know, you treat people like you wanted to be treated, and treat people with respect. And there was enough Japanese guys, from the guys that was coming on Sundays with Carl Gotch, you know, because he was a god of wrestling over there. So I'd meet some Japanese guys that way. I wasn't friends, but I'm just saying, you know, you learn. And then some of the Japanese guys that would get off the plane actually come to Malenko's to train. And then I knew guys like Joe and Dean that was going over there regular. So I knew, you know, a little bit about the customs. And, of course, you don't know everything, but you listen and you learn, man. And I went over very respectful, and I was willing to learn and willing to work. And at the time, you know, I worked with Sasuke, Grand Hamada. I worked with Jensei that was in, you know, WWF. What was his name? The Dark Angel. I can't remember his name now, and he was Jensei with the tattoos, him and Taka Michinoku, a young Sean Funaki at the time. He was only, he's probably like second year, you know, in with Michinoku, young guy back then. I'd work with all them guys, you know, they're all smaller than me, and I just went out there and got over, man, and luckily, you know.
What's it like calling a match with someone that doesn't speak English? How does that work?
You know, they know a lot more English than what you think. That's one thing, you know, except for if you need something, I don't know shit. you know, that's like most cultures, you know, I don't know if you know English, whatever, but you know, as far as my relationship with them, a lot of times it was very simple. It's like, you know, you just work and then.
I'd imagine like, ow, that fucking hurt is a lot very similar in Japanese as it is in English.
Once I was working with Jinsei in a match and I kicked him, and I know I didn't kick him very hard, but I kicked him and he goes, you hurt me. You know, like, well, fucking lighten up yourself or something. You know, I'm sure I had something for him to come back with. But no, it was easy once you listened and understood. Cause like I said, and I had interpreters there, but they knew English a lot better, like I said, than what you think. But also, like in the tag teams and the six mans, those were a lot easier than what I thought they were. I was scared to death thinking, oh, I'm going to fuck something up. But in the six mans, we would sit in a circle, you know, so you got six, seven people sitting there. And a referee at the time, he was really good interpreter too, telling what the office expected. He was a good go-between between Sasuke and myself, or Hamada. Hamada always talked to me on a bus and would smarten me up like, Bobby, more stiff. You know, he'd been to Mexico, and he was a fucking legend. He was a little short guy, you know, really well built, had been a big star. And he was like 50 years old at the time. He was like, you know, pick me up, slam me, you're big, you do this and do that. So I listened to what they told me. But on those six mans, I was like, how the fuck do these guys remember this? And I remember sitting in a circle, and they would be talking. And I'm like, what the fuck? And every once in a while, I hear Blaze. And they talk, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on? I'm sitting there in my head, the gears are clicking, and I hear Blaze. So I was like, somewhere near the fucking Blaze, you know? And then afterwards, you know, the guy said, here's what you do. And then when you do this, you're going to do it with one guy, and you'll see, like, the first baby face will be at the first heel. And then the heel will take a powder, and then second heel come in. When he takes a powder, that's your cue. Anytime that sex, so it'd be a sequence of the first guy, second guy. I always knew I was the third guy because I was the biggest as the heels. And they said, also, when we do a spot, when you do one Sasuke, Jinsei and Hamada will feed you. So always know whatever you're going to do, you do it three times. So I would know, like, when there was a heel, say the first guy was dropping an elbow, I knew, you know what, I ain't even waiting for a fucking tag. You go deliver that third and final elbow. I would know that, you know, elbow drop or whatever. And I'd know that if someone's feeding me, and if I just, like, you know, went around and German suplex someone, them other two baby faces are going to be hollering their ass, and I'd go right behind them and, you know, do whatever. So it's just kind of a sequence of things that you pick up on, if that makes sense. And obviously, when you go outside the ring, you're just going to fucking fight. I'm not going to punch you in the face and you know, I'm going to protect you as best I can protect you, but I'm going to hit you hard across the chest, the back, you know, same thing. And Sasuke was such a great, of course, that's your boss. You better fucking take care of him. But, man, he was like picking up a piece of paper. He was so light the way he worked. And we go outside the ring, and I just touch him. He's flying into the fucking mats at the end of the gym or through chairs or whatever. So I was like, you know what? You just take care of this guy. And he's going to take care of you. And that's the way it worked, man. But as far as calling a match, is like, you know, we're going to wrestle, do this, and cut you off and do that. The first matches, if I was in the first three matches, they said, Bobby, you got a young boy tonight. And they'd tell me, first match, if they said, give him one move. And I said, what's he do? And they said, drop kick. I said, all right, tell him, you know, I'll feed him a drop kick. One drop. Other than that, I beat the shit out of him. Again, not hurt him, but, you know, basically just they was there to learn. If it's second match, they may say, Bobby, give this boy, you know, he's only had like maybe 40 matches. I said, Bobby, give him three spots. So I'd walk to him. I'd do him the same way like a Bobby Eaton or a Brad Armstrong. Some of these guys I work with, you know, great guys that you could go up to and they say, what do you do best? Okay, come back and let's put together a match. And I'd ask the young boy, I said, what are you doing? He'd go, oh, I do this, I do that. I go, okay, come back. A business only? And so, you know, you learn, and Jinsei would say, you know, Bobby, tonight, maybe – business only. You tap? I say, big move first. And he said, oh, yeah, how about, because he used to pin me with a power bomb. And I know I'm doing an exaggerated Japanese accent, but he'd say, you know, basically, I'd say, you know, tapping to what, you know? And he'd go, oh, you know what, we'll set it up with, and of course, he's speaking it slow or whatever. He'd go, how about tonight you kick out of my power bomb, but when you roll over, you know, I tap you. I'm like, oh, yeah, no problem, because it meant something. So maybe the first couple of times he had beaten me, and I'd always beat the young guys. That's the way it worked in Japan, too. I caught on to. The first two or three, maybe 4 days, I'd beat up a young boy. And then, like, maybe they'd move me up to semi-main, and I'd beat up someone, but it'd be pretty competitive. And then they'd give you Jinsei or Sasuke or one of the bigger stars. And then, of course, guess what? And they keep tracking the papers and the magazines. At that point, you're going to put them over. And that's just the way it was. So I'd stay strong, and again, I might work with those guys 2 or 3 days and get beat, but then I'd go right back to maybe third match, and then I'd start going over strong again and work my way back up to card. And it's just, you know, business only. And then, of course, you're going to do a six-man in there somewhere and a tag match in there somewhere. It always keeps – what I liked about all of that, I guess why I'm really excited about talking about the Japanese, is because they kept it as a professional competition. They really did, you know. And I like that because, to me, that's pro wrestling. You know, you got something to – I see so many guys that don't go for a pin. And I think, you know, here's the thing. When you're wrestling, you've got an objective, and that's to pin the guy to the mat or make him submit, you know. So I'm not saying get submission on a guy every time or try to pin a guy after the first minute, you know. But I'm saying, you know, sometimes – Your goal actually is to win the competition. So when you throw those things in there, and that's what the Japanese were known for, they kept it like a competition. And the fans were great in Japan because they have so much respect for professional wrestling. But anyway, I could talk about Japan forever. I hope I answered your question. Fuck. I just love wrestling, obviously. I'm sorry. I just ran.
Dude, you were going to apologize. This is fucking great.
You asked where I was from. I got fan mail the other day, and I went on a big fucking rant on my podcast, the Bell to Bell with Bobby Blaze podcast, about fucking – these people, my name got added to some list out in California, some fan biz thing. They gave out my fucking address, and these people started sending me fucking blank envelopes, and that pissed me off. At least, because what happened was I sent out the first letter I got. I get fan mail, but not like every fucking day like I have been. And I was like, what the fuck is going on here? What happened was someone had written me, and they sent an actual self-addressed stamp envelope with a picture in it, and I signed it, mailed it back. But they wrote me this letter, and they had been a veteran, and they talked about my career. And I thought, well, this person obviously, you know, pretty smart about who I am. Well, I sent them an 8x10 autographed color photo on my dime. I took a bigger envelope, and I said, I'll get the address off the other one. I did that and found out, because I started getting all these letters, and I'm like, this is very unusual. And I'm like, these people are obviously not from the podcast, because it's fucking taking, cutting and pasting shit off Wikipedia and send me little paper, generic fucking pictures off the internet to sign. I'm like, and then some of them was like blank envelopes. Like someone's like, give me a picture. I'm like, how fucking rude are you? You fucking, this shit calls ain't. What happened was, see, I'm getting ready to go on a rant at me too. Anyway, what happened was, find out, I went to that site, and it said, that first guy I mailed that letter back to, he wrote a fucking thing that said, hey, I had success. So apparently if you get success with one of these, quote, over 50,000 celebrities that you can write to, where I sent him an 8x10, he wrote, oh, this guy gives out, Bobby Blaze is great. He gives out free 8x10 pictures. I had a success. And I was like, what the fuck? And then come to find out that company had given him like a $10 fucking gift card. And I'm like, so on top of a fucking $10 picture I sent
you. Oh, that's awesome.
What you should do, Bobby, is start sending your underwear now.
Huh?
You should start like sending like a sock.
Oh yeah,
or
no,
maybe
I
like an article of your.
I got my business card. I'm gonna start putting. I got a shitload of stack of envelopes right here with no even stamps and nothing. They didn't get thrown away. The ones that at least have a stamped envelope in it, I just put a note that says photos are $10. I looked the company up. I wrote them a letter, and I basically said what I just now said. I said if people want a fucking 8x10, it's a $10 service. Or take me off your fucking list. And the people wrote me back and said, we added it. So now if you go to that thing, it said, at least it says $10 if you want a fucking autographed picture. My autograph is never going to cost anyone a damn dime. I'm honored that someone even asked for my autograph.
Bro, $10 is very reasonable. They're charging like $80 at some of these conventions.
Yeah, Jeff
and shit.
Jeff and I paid $80 for Adam West.
I went to WrestleCade, and I see them fucking picture, but mine's just an 8x10. It's out of California. I got three different. It's really nice. It's well worth $20 fucking dollars, you know. But I charged $10 for them. And but I mailed this guy one, and he got a success, and he got a $10 gift card. Where that company gave up my address, and someone got a success. I started getting I love fan mail. Don't get me wrong. But these the people I've been getting these from are obviously just like autograph seekers and photo seekers, not like Bobby Blaze or even wrestling fans, if that makes sense. They just think you're a fucking celebrity because they put you on some celebrity list. And I'm like, motherfucker, I live over here in this little house on Main Street, barely fucking keeping the lights on. Mail me, motherfucker, a $10 gift card. I dare you. You know, I'll spend it. I'll sell it for $5. I don't know. But yeah, I needed to get that in there. But yeah, so fuck. buy my books. They're available on Amazon. I'll get myself a cheap plug here. You know,
no, man, do
I'll
it to it.
About more plugs than a fucking cheap anal plug. I don't know. You know, buy my book, Pin Me, Pay Me, How Boots Will Travel. That's my first book. Buy, you know, I kicked out on 2, The Educational Wrestler. That's my second book. And I've got 2 e-books. You know, I've got Seasons F and Greetings, My Best Christmas Ever. And I got Yard Time. I worked in a federal prison for almost 2 years in between breaking into professional wrestling and getting my first contract. And it's a straight shoot story. It's also included in I Kicked Out on 2. But yes, we ran a professional wrestling show inside of a federal prison, and it's a true story, and I wrote it just like it happened, and Muhammad Ali had been there, and of course, everyone that knows Muhammad Ali, you know, he unified after many years, of course, and having done what he'd done, he's, you know, if Michael Jordan, I guess, may or may not have, I don't know who, the most recognizable athlete in the world would be, you know, given at one time it had to be Muhammad Ali. And they brought him into the prison, and you know, in prison people do segregate themselves. You know, you got your whites and bikers and this and that, you got your blacks, and you got your Hispanics, and you got your others and wannabes, whatever. And we had like 1,000 inmates out there, and Ali drew like 667 inmates because, you know, everyone from white people, black people, Hispanic, everyone knew who fucking Muhammad Ali is. In prison, if you bring in a rap group, you know, not to be discriminatory, but black people would go to the black group rapping, some white guy. If country music came in, and this is back in, you know, early 90s, then the white guys would go, and a couple blacks maybe. Hispanics, if they brought in something, you know, if it, religion, if they brought in a special gospel group, only guys that, you know, went to chapel would go. So they would draw small crowds. Ali, there was actually 1,200 and some inmates at that prison, and he drew 667. I'll tell you why I know that, because I presented a warden with professional wrestling. I presented with my supervisor, chain of command, to where I got to sit down with the warden and say, hey, look here, professional wrestling doesn't discriminate. It draws from all demographics, just like Ali did. I said, if we can put a professional wrestling show on out here, and here's the price I give it to you for, this is what I'd like to do. And we drew 661 people out of the give or take. There was 1,200 give or take at any given time. Out of that, about 800 inmates are eligible because some are on lockdown 24/7. Some have to work the kitchen. The prison still has to run. And a lot of times, you know, the inmates have jobs that, you know, require them to be, you know, cooking or what have you. So we had about 800 inmates eligible, and Ali drew 667. Professional wrestling, we drew 661. We had, of course, you got a captive audience, you know, pun intended there. But yeah, we brought the ring truck in, and we had guys that did the announcing. I can't give out names or anything. There was a guy that had been a former, and of course, is way back when. Some of these guys are probably dead by now or dying in prison still. I don't know. Hope some of them are still around. But we had some of them do the announcing. Had a couple guys that had been DJs out in the street that ran the PA system. We let one guy that had been a boxer out of Louisville, Kentucky, that was serving time, big old fucking guy, and let him referee. He actually showed me a Kentucky boxing license he had someone mailed into him, and he showed it to me where it expired, of course, and he's like, damn, I said, this guy legit, you know, a fucking referee to boxing, referee one of the matches, you know, even though it's wrestling. And the prisoners loved it, man. But we drew 661 people. That's called yard time. And when I went back in that night, I wrestled a guy that went under the outlaw, and he come out and he said, hey, I heard Bobby Blaze, a CO at this prison. Well, just like all you innocent people here, you know, I don't deserve to be here on this day. And he just done the whole heel interview. And I had no choice, but I heard Bobby Blaze, the CO at this prison, and I'm gonna do all you inmates a favor, and I'm gonna go out there and break his fucking back. And of course, you can't cuss in prison. Yeah, right. But yeah, that's pretty much what he said, you know. And the inmates went fucking crazy. And, you know, they're yelling, drop kick that motherfucker, you know, whatever, beat the fuck out of them. And we had the match. And believe it or not, when I went back in, I worked midnights. When I went back at that particular time, you did 3 month shifts. And I went in at midnight, and the unit I went into was just basically what's called a barn. You had 100 guys on each side, there's 50 on each side, it's divided in half. And I had about 60 or 70 guys waiting for me when I went at midnight, standing up and started clapping when I walked in. And as I'd done the midnight count, as soon as that count cleared, they come up to my office and thank me. They said, man, we felt like, you know, it's kind of like that story on Shawshank Redemption, man, when the guys are up there drinking a few beers, they felt like men. These guys felt like men again. They said, when it was a Sunday afternoon show. We had to start at 1 o'clock, be done by 3. So we come in at noon, had to be out there by 3:30 because there was a 4 o'clock count time. And those guys were like, man, it was like sitting with one of my friends out on the street, you know, watching professional wrestling with them. You know, I made the guys feel good, and it made me feel good, you know, because I knew I wasn't my brother's keeper also. You know, I didn't want to be a fucking prison guard. You're locked up just like they are while you're there, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I brought professional wrestling to prison. That's called yard time. Awesome. So since wrestling, you know, I've always been a writer, and just to get the gab, I guess, and I just tell it like it is. And I know how I talk because I've got the degree in communication, but no, that's not because I've got the degree in communication. I've always just talked this way. You can't go to your boss and say, fuck you, every other week or every other day in the real world. But in professional wrestling, you know, I worked with Jim Cornette for 3 years, and you know, it's like, how the fuck are you? I'm doing fucking good, you know. So, and you're in a carload full of guys, or you're in a locker room full of guys, and some habits are just hard to break, you know. So I just talk like I talk, and sometimes I'm just unfiltered. I don't mean to be, but it's just from all those years. And then, you know, you get kicked in the head a few times, you fucking get on rewind. You're like, what the fuck? You don't even realize that you're, you know, your 3-year-old granddaughter's in the room. You're like, what the fuck? And you're like, oh shit, better start watching your
She's
mouth.
She's not,
you
right know? Though, Mom? She's not been.
But, you try to, but sometimes I'm just like.
She hasn't been there this whole time, right?
Huh?
Your granddaughter hasn't been in the room this whole time, right?
No, she's in the military. All right, good.
Jesus Christ, man.
He's in the military. He served 4 years. That's why I sent that fucking guy a goddamn 8x10 free, because he put on there he had been in the military. I respect these servicemen and servicewomen that are serving this country. Okay, my son done 4 years in the Marines, and now he's been in the Army for the last year, and he's got three more years left in the Army. She they're in Fort Bragg, North Carolina right now, so I don't think she can hear me. My youngest son, as mentioned, he'll be 21 this Wednesday. So I'm in a room by myself. Hell, because of the hurricane there recently, my daughter-in-law, she was the one actually smarting me up to, I would tell myself, I was saying, what the fuck is going on? I'm getting this fucking fan mail, and I'm talking out loud. My daughter-in-law sitting there, and my little granddaughter wasn't, probably may have been near the vicinity. And she's like, Bob, you know a guy I know would go off when getting fan mail. What's wrong? I said, because there's something wrong with this. And she's the one that smarted me up and said, well, if you go to this website, because she pulled it up, she goes, there's a reason for this. And she typed in Bobby Blaze address or something, then it was on it. She goes, here's why you're getting it. And then a couple of days went by, and I was like, you know what? And they left because they was up here because of the hurricane, what I was getting at. So, yeah, I probably did say whatever in front of whoever, who knows. But yeah, that's when a couple of days later, after she told me, I said, you know what? I'm gonna go back and check that site. And that's when I saw where the guy got a $10 gift card. And I was like, motherfucker, you got me for a picture and you got a gift card? Suck my dick. He runs backwards.
Bobby, I got to tell you, we're all fans here, and we were just talking about it, and we would like to we'd like to send you $10, and we'd like to get an 8x10.
We're sending our $10 in for
one. Well, we would like to get one if you could autograph it, the chicken duck and everything, and that'd be great.
We'll get the check out this week.
No, okay, so.
Or PayPal. I don't know if you have PayPal.
No, look here. We get offline, send me a fucking address, or I'll give you mine, and I'll take care of you guys for putting me on your podcast. But fucking tell everyone else it's 10 fucking
bucks. All right, yeah, absolutely, man.
Absolutely.
We'll
cut that part out.
Listen, bro, we'll make it $13. That way we can get $3 out of them, too. It's only fair.
I'm going to carry it around like a fucking card. Stanley Cup. You're going to stare one fucking picture of Bobby Blaze around and go, it's my week. You know?
Well, hey, brother, I really...
Get me offline, and I'll take care of you guys. For
right on, man.
You know, you're putting me on your podcast, and I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, we appreciate you calling it, dude.
Sincerely.
Well,
and I like to have fun, obviously, you know.
We'll definitely we'll be in touch also, because, you know, you got plenty of shit to talk about, obviously.
Oh, yeah,
so.
Yeah.
But we really appreciate you calling in, man.
I felt like it is, man. I try not to have any heat with any of the boys. That's if you... Both my books, and I'm on any podcast, and I've been for 3.5 years now, I've been doing a shitload of podcasts, and I love every one of them. I've been a regular on several.
Nice.
I have my own, which I think I'm 19 episodes into, and I love that. I'm a podcast fucking mark. I listen to any of them that I can, and if I enjoy them, I listen to them on a regular, and I set me a little schedule. So I know the power of a podcast, and I love that. that you can get your word out and get your message out and get your books out. So I'll take care of you guys for putting me on.
Right on.
And I mean that most sincerely. I do appreciate it. And I like to have fun with them. People have went so far to call me a podcast personality. Well, I don't know about that, you know, but I'm on them and I enjoy them. And
nice.
So
we'll keep,
I just want to thank you guys.
We'll keep you on the list, brother. We really appreciate you calling in.
Well, I'm going to send you three. Here's what I'm going to do.
Go ahead.
You other fans out there, fucking send in $10. But I'm going to send you guys, I've got three different ones. I'll make sure you guys are taken care of with these 8x10 color photos, okay?
They'll be hung up. I'll give one to Sammy. He can hang them up in his studio.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, I forgot what you we did. Need that. But I'll take care of you guys. I do appreciate it, man.
Right on, man. Well, hey, thanks again for calling in.
Yes.
Everybody, go ahead and plug your books again, man.
Yes. Okay. So all my books are available on Amazon. And if you want, follow me on Twitter at BobbyBlaze744. That is me. That's my real account, BobbyBlaze744 on Twitter. My books are available on Amazon. You can download them using the Kindle or the Kindle app. But both books, physical books, are available in print editions. And it's Pin Me, Pay Me, Have Boots, Will Travel. My second book is called I Kicked Out on Two, The Education of a Wrestler. Those are available in ebook and as print editions. Then I have two ebooks in addition to that. One of them's called Yard Time, Life in the Big House. The second one is called Seasons Effin' Greetings, My Best Christmas Ever. And that one's only $2.99. It's a 15-page short story with Christmas coming up. Download that motherfucker because I might get my granddaughter a nice little gift with the residuals of a dollar off each book. You know, 99 cents from fucking Kindle downloads, my whole 99 cent savings there. So get, download that book if nothing else. That's the cheap way out. And then also, you know, leave me a review on Amazon if you're reading my books. I like all reviews, 1 through 5, preferably a 4 or 5 star, you know. But I think you'll enjoy it because it talks about Christmas and just what a fucking fun time we had. And, you know, as you get older, you look back on these things. And man, I just realized, you know, 19, 20 years old, and you're fucking riding in a car and these things happen. Man, life happens. Like I said, enjoy your one-year-old because 20 years passed me by, you know, with my young one. And I've raised both my boys, and I'm proud of that. And man, just, you know, help a brother out. Get my damn books. Pin Me, Pay Me, Have Boots, Will Travel. And I kicked out on to the Education of Wrestler. Get them off Amazon and download those motherfuckers. If you want one autographed, get with me at BobbyBlaze744, DM me. And I'll tell you how you can get it for the same price as Amazon, except for I'll fucking sign up for you and mail it back to you, but there is a fee.
Damn right.
Well, right on, Bobby. Hey, thanks again, man. We'll be in touch very soon. We appreciate you calling in. And take care of yourself, man.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks, Bobby.
See you, Bob.
Take care.
Yes. See
you. Well, that was Bobby Blaze. Thank you, Sam.
Dude, I almost pissed myself at least at least 4 or 5 times. I mean, you guys know way more about wrestling than
I'm so lost with it.
And I was looking at Casey, and you were looking like you'd never fucking.
Well, I was thinking that when he was talking about like powdering out of the ring and coming at like you guys have no idea what that means.
No clue.
I was thinking the same thing. Like, they're probably thinking there's actual powder.
I was trying to figure out what powdering was.
I spent a good 5 minutes talking to myself, being like, the heel's the villain, right?
Yeah, I knew that.
And when you
only
powder,
from hanging out with him, though,
you powder is when you get out of the ring. You powder.
I thought there was like a bag of powder, like when a gymnast has to powder their hands up. You know,
no actual powder. Powder is when you get out, exit the ring.
Hmm. Huh. That's something.
So gained a little wrestling knowledge today.
I think we gained a lot of wrestling knowledge today.
Absolutely.
That was intense. I mean, he's a fucking experienced.
Chatter.
Yeah.
He's got the gift of gab.
He says. Well, so do I. I can't.
So next week I have scheduled to call his name is Eddie Lee Nelson. He claims to be the son of Willie Nelson.
Shut up.
I swear to God.
Why does he call next week? Why not now?
Why not now?
I have him scheduled next week. We can have Morgani call right now if you want. Let's start another episode. End this one.
No, it's too hard to
This is
episode two. Welcome back. I didn't even intro the first one.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah,
you didn't. You're gonna have to do it now, and he's gonna have to patch it.
Yeah, I didn't say welcome to Chicken Duck.
We'll do that right
I'm
now.
So hungry. Do we really have to do a whole other episode?
Let's just talk to Jimbo real quick.
I just want to say that I drove an hour and I said three words.
Yeah, yeah.
And I
live here and I only said fucking three words.
I was listening to an old episode when I was on my drive to Penn State a couple weeks ago. I listened to like a bunch of episodes.
Of Saturdays with Chicken Duck?
Yes.
We've got you!
You listen to our podcast more than I have.
Yeah, I don't listen to my own podcast either, yeah. So... but I wanted to take care of a dispute the two of you were having during an episode.
All right.
I was right.
About income. It was... I was sitting there by myself, like, in the car, and I just wanted to, like, be able to call in. And I'm like, this isn't live. This happened months ago. So, first off, Jeff, I could tell you were very... My income isn't taxed. When I apply for a loan, you know, they're not treating me fairly.
Yeah.
I actually worked as an underwriter for Wells Fargo for 5 years. So what they do is they take your income and they multiply it by 1.25% and gross it up. So you are being treated fairly.
Yes, but there's nothing that tells – there's nothing on the paperwork that says you don't get taxed.
No, they know. Like, I know.
How do they know?
It's just like Wendy's knows that the frosties are 50 cents.
Yeah, but it doesn't say what is your job and how much you make. It always just says, what's your income?
But they're going to get the income documents from you. They're not going to just turn you down based on your stated income. Like at an actual
your employer's
bank.
Tax exempt.
So you're gonna, I'm gonna get like your.
Yeah, wait. When you apply for like a credit card at Best Buy, you don't give them paperwork and shit.
Well, a credit card at Best Buy, you're gonna get approved for that unless you're derelict.
But my point
you're
is that
your
on
social
that
security number and your employee. I mean, your all your
so
employee.
When they go away for 5 minutes, they get all that fucking information.
No, but I'm saying if you're getting a car loan, if you're getting a line of credit, if you're getting a mortgage, you're gonna hand them your. Source of income, they're going to need
Sam,
to see
the
it.
Wrestling expert, everybody talking yes. about,
and they're going to gross up your income, so you will be on a fair playing field with Jim over here.
Open it up a can of worms that he's not ready for. I assure you, Jeff hasn't even.
Okay,
listen,
no, that's great. I know.
Jeff hasn't even begun to decompress for the last 4 weeks.
Yeah, I haven't been here a while.
To explode about it. And you jump right on top of him about how I'm right and he's wrong.
I'm just upset that you're saying he's right. No. I mean, I
hold on, hold on.
What?
Good
morning. This is Chicken Duck.
Excuse me, Jim?
why is he so quiet?
Hi, James.
Because he's probably on some kind of like.
Are you on some weird phone?
No, I'm using the LG Z30.
Yeah,
thank
you. I can turn you up.
No, I mean I can hear him, but it sounds like he's on like a speakerphone, and the speakerphone's in his car, and he's standing outside of his car.
Bigfoot's probably running behind him, and there's a fucking UFO.
He's probably knee driving,
chasing,
eating a taco.
Oh, geez, I am. I'm actually eating a Swiss bar and knee driving.
Did you get out of church without being molested today?
Yeah, because I don't go to a satanic bowel worshiping Catholic church.
Oh, just like you did your entire life up to 17.
Well, I was forced upon it. It was forced upon me because my family, you know, is Italian. The Italians like their, you know, they like their paganism and their satanic, you know, bowing before the, you know.
Are you part of the Me Too movement?
Of statues and stuff.
You know, molesting happens at other churches than just the Catholics, Jim.
He swore to me that he knew that they were all of us at HGA were molested. He knew that I was an altar boy.
I wasn't attractive enough to be molested.
I was never a fucking altar boy either. Like you have this memory of all kinds of things happening.
No, I don't. I didn't say you got plowed. I remember you were. I thought you were an altar boy.
I got to be honest with you. If I was an altar boy, I don't see why I wouldn't have. I'm not questioning why. I mean, maybe I'm a little. I don't know.
Do you know who's on the phone here with us, or who's in the studio with us here, Jim?
Yeah, did that hear Sam?
You sure did.
I heard Jeff too.
Yes, sir.
How was that desk? What did you write on the desk?
I just wrote my name.
You didn't write any? I thought you were going to write
so
some.
Much, there's so much writing on it.
What desk?
Remember the desk he was going to go to in the middle of nowhere, up on the top of some hill? And
oh, America. I saw a picture, I think, of
Why
that.
Wouldn't you put, like, a sticker? Didn't you have any stickers?
No, I didn't, and there are these
girls
drinking up top there. They're Saturday fundaying.
No, wait.
And
James, what? You're the only one thing we asked you to do while you're traveling all over the fucking creation is put stickers on shit randomly.
I don't have any more stickers, Jim. And I got distracted by these women that were all drinking beer up top there.
Jim, you're surrounded by drinking women all the time. I'm sick of hearing the excuses.
And I thought you went with a lovely lady.
I did. Yeah, you know, she's just a friend though. Dating promises. Just,
are you still
you know, nice? You know,
are you
nice
still cleaning famous people's?
With, you know,
hey,
no.
Are you still cleaning
carpet?
People that know famous people's carpet?
Yeah, I'm
drapery.
Still
cleaning meatloaf out of meatloaf.
Servant.
It was like meatloaf's fucking housemaid, though. It wasn't meatloaf. It was like
no. He met Lance Armstrong's.
Yeah, like fucking groom dog groomers. Fucking
sister's girlfriend.
Right.
Cousin's former roommate.
He didn't hate her. He just fucking washed her carpet.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Every time you want me, who do you want? What do you want
when are you coming home?
What do you want to know the celebrity gossip?
When we, I don't care to know any celebrity gossip.
Yeah, when are you coming home? Because this open the phone shit sucks. We need you here.
What?
We need you here. When are you coming home?
In November.
For Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
I'll be in, not in town.
Me either, probably. It's Devin's birthday. We're going somewhere. Where are you going?
Florida.
Wait, who do you guys have on the show today? Who do you guys call?
Bobby Blaze was the guest, Jim. It was quite an experience. You'll have to listen.
You'll have to listen, but you won't because it's like a fucking hour long and you never listen to the show ever.
I try to. I just have, you know, there's so many things going on here. I wanted to ask, so you have Sam there. Sam, you need to get down here, man. There is, you know, so much, what word can I look for? Opportunity. Down here for a single, you know, businessman like yourself, you know, with a good head of hair.
Do you need my advice on this, or are you okay? I mean, I'm willing to give you advice here, but I don't think you need it.
No, I don't. Okay. I already know.
Sam's going to pass on that. Sam's going to. That's a hard no from Sam.
Jim, the opportunities that you think will present themselves to me aren't going to happen.
What? You just have so much going on. You just have so much going on for you down in Reading, I guess, huh?
That's correct. Over there.
Hey, listen, after this past interview, shit's going to really fucking blow up for Sam. I can tell. What's people get wind of the Bobby Blaze interview that we just had? You might not know who Bobby Blaze is, but you will.
Or you should.
Who did the interview? Who
Bobby Blaze did it mostly.
Yeah.
Yeah, he pretty much ran the show. I'm thinking I might just call him every Sunday just to get things going and let him take over the show for me.
Well,
you could combine the two podcasts.
He might be the new host of Saturdays with Chicken Nuts. We're not sure.
I might just hand everything over to him, all for the price of 3 8x10s.
Yeah.
And a gift card.
$30.
Yeah, Saturdays with the wrestling dorks.
Whoa.
The crossover event.
We removed Chicken Duck entirely, though. I don't like that. The whole thing's based around Chicken Duck. Saturday was really only an afterthought because I was singing it and it fucking sounded good. What was the jingle on the first or like the half episode? Do we still have access to that?
Yeah, I have access. Like,
listen to that sometime.
Somewhere. Oh, the long pause?
No.
Ooh, a long
time. What happened?
Have you guys been... you know, I don't know how far down the deep web you go, but Jim,
we don't.
Did you see what China? Sorry to bring up a conspiracy, but it's not China.
Well you know, we're heading through a tunnel.
Yeah, there's some really nasty interference. I think there must be a helicopter overhead.
Yeah,
the FBI or the CIA is cutting us out. All right.
Wait. Good. I said I was talking about. Did you hear me?
Oh, I can hear you now. Here. What were you talking about?
Sky. Okay. China.
Good guy.
China has,
I believe it's pronounced China, by the way.
China is has a program that where it controls that where Google's moving all their stuff to, and it's called Skynet.
Oh man!
Did you see that?
No.
And they're calling the AI program the same name as Terminator 2, as the program what the robots killed all the humans called Skynet. It's actually called Skynet.
Maybe if you have more time next week, we could talk about that.
I want you to think about something for the next week, and then we'll discuss this again when we talk next week. Do you think that it's possible that Arnold Schwarzenegger is actually a robot and he has been sent back in time?
No,
think about it for one
minute. No, I need you to think about it, not answer me right now. I think he might be a robot. Jim, it was nice talking to you.
Cliffhanger.
Get back to church.
Oh, I'm actually meeting these chicks at Chili's right now.
Oh.
But,
what is this? You going to fucking Chili's after church every week?
Chili's and church.
They have margarita specials, like, you know, Sunday fun day.
And then blowjobs.
It helps them to release the demons.
Something about going to church just makes me feel, I feel so alive. So, you know, margaritas, a couple shots, you know what I mean, women.
For 75 years, Advance Auto Parts has helped a nation of do-it-yourselfers fix their vehicles. Advance Auto Parts has the essentials from brake pads to batteries, along with all of the final touches, like hoses and filters. When you do it yourself, you want the best parts and the best prices, whether it's for the body or under the hood. We'll get you the right part at your local store or delivered to your home. So to save 20% off your first order, go to advanceautooffer.com/chickenduck. Again, that's advanceautooffer.com/chickenduck to save 20% off your first order. Enter promo code AAP20CAST for 20% savings.
Jim, are you still there?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, we got to go.
All right. Well,
hey, man. No, it was good talking to you, buddy.
Oh, Sam, get the next flight you can to Austin.
Actually, it's funny you say that. We're working on that right now.
I'll actually let you know. My one coworker is heading down to Austin Friday, so I'll give him your number for a good time.
How old is she?
It's a man.
It's a guy, so you'd have to probably just buy him a couple margaritas and get a blowjob from a dude. No big deal. You're open to that now that you're down in Austin.
I met a guy. I was down.
What?
He started that with, I met a guy.
I was drunk one night.
What?
Sitting on the sidewalk waiting for my Uber because I was hammered, and I was eating this like food truck food. It was like some Middle Eastern food. And this guy that looked like a computer desk type of guy, mid-40s, sat down next to me, you know, out of shape, you know, soft, wobbly stomach on the sides and everything. Old, probably doesn't like his life anymore. He came up, and I was just sitting there, and he comes up, hey, man, how's your night going? I was like, pretty good, you know, just waiting for an Uber. Got
blow,
pretty
dude.
Drunk. And he says, he was like, oh, yeah, man, I've been there. Hey, you want a blowjob? What? So he's like, yeah, man, come on, just a blowjob. I mean, I'll get you $10.
Wait. He was offering to both give you a blowjob and pay you $10.
$10.
No, Jimmy
would have to pay $10.
Wait, who's paying who?
You're paying him.
I'd be paying him.
Oh.
And I was like, I actually told him, I was like, sir, you have a shirt that's tucked in. You know, it looks like you have a job. Why you know, you're better than that. And he's like,
$15 at least.
But he couldn't answer you with your dick in his mouth?
Don't you want it?
How long?
No, man, I don't do that.
Jim.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to figure out he was a dude?
He was definitely a dude, I could tell.
Yeah, but I mean, after or before he blew you?
Yeah, he had gray hair, he had glasses on. He looked like just like a normal schlub, an American Joe.
Before he gave you a blowjob, he realized? Or after he gave you a blowjob, you realized that he was a guy?
No, I refused the blowjob, and I, you know, continued eating my food next to him.
I thought you would have countered.
I had to wait there for my Uber, and I couldn't change it because he was so close.
I thought you would have countered with offering him a blowjob.
Last thing. Guys, remember, we're here for something great in this world. Let's pursue a purpose, and let's be great.
Okay.
You're still there, right? I didn't lose you.
Hey. I want some sightings of the chupacabra while you're down there.
I did see a couple weird lights in Marfa yesterday, Friday.
The Chupacabra is a goat sucker, so it really doesn't have anything to do with lights. I don't know what lights would have to do with an animal that resembles a mangy coyote. Hey, Jim, it was great talking to you.
Jim. Hey, how's your weight loss program coming?
Hey, bye-bye.
Good. Good. How's your savings coming?
Really good, Jim.
Oh, good.
I could afford to, you know,
it's down $10.
I can afford things now.
Yeah. What can you afford?
Well, I just paid for a hotel.
Have you been drinking rock filtered water on Sundays? Have you been going to brunch every Sunday?
Hello, what?
Brunch. Have you been going to brunch?
Oh, yes, I usually do. Yeah, I can afford brunch now.
Whoa.
I'm like, Jim, I'm like those trendy people going to brunch. I have my skinny jeans on.
Let me ask, Jim.
I have a long t-shirt.
What kind of water do you drink while you're at brunch?
It's called, I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's
Topo Chico.
Chico or something?
Topo Chico.
Yeah, it's what all the people that try to be cool and popular. They have their like loose fitting clothes and their tight pants and their Aldo shoes that doesn't tear their ankles apart for some reason.
It's Mexican sparkling water.
How do you know?
Because they sell it at all the Mexican restaurants.
Topo Chico.
Yeah, remember I asked you about it.
Chico.
Yeah,
I do remember now. Well, what fucking high end? It's not high end water.
No,
it's just fucking water.
Myself affording all these brunches, and I paid for the hotel, hotel stay with me and this woman
that's a friend
that
turned out to be a dude.
I went to the place with, and I afforded it, Jim. You know what it feels like to be a man and say, "Hey, lady, yeah, let me buy this hotel room," and they're like, "Oh,
yeah."
Well, I mean, she makes about three times.
I do remember my early 20s.
I just had to feel like,
yeah,
they were great. Now I'm married. But that was 13 years ago. So.
Yeah, I've upgraded. Instead of buying hotel rooms, I bought a fucking house.
Yeah, now I just go wherever I want in my house and do whatever I want instead of having to do it at a hotel.
Now Jeff can drive his hotel room around.
Yeah, I bought a mobile hotel room.
Well, good.
Any questions for me, boys?
No. Go have a margarita for us.
All right, I will.
We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys.
Goodbye.
See you, bud.
Later.
Goodbye.
I put my own toilet seat on today. We didn't even get to talk about it at all.
We didn't talk at all. I know. That's what I'm a little upset about,
to be
honest.
Well, let's talk. Let's do another fucking... I have until 3 to pick the kid up. You really got to go put a roof on.
Well, I have to go check some things, but I have time for like 10 minutes.
10 minutes.
Jeff, go ahead and bitch about whatever you got to bitch about. This fucking asshole over here.
I don't even know anymore.
I know. It's not even worth talking about. I'm that fucking upset about it. I'm starving.
See, I just want to confirm. So I have nothing to worry about when I fill out forms for income.
You're good.
I should just put down the whatever it is and move all my life. Okay.
Best part about Sam coming today.
That
whole interaction.
If you make $5,000 a month, they're gonna give you credit for $6,250.
All right. Awesome. Okay. Good to know.
And we are
so weight lifted off my shoulder.
Exactly. There's no judgment against the untaxed.
Now let's talk about people who are stupid in billing.
No, we have to wait for Vu for that.
I know.
Vu's in that field.
Big talk about Popeye's chicken in the area this week. And
what?
I think Popeye's.
I haven't had it yet.
There's big talk in it?
What do you mean, like they're opening one up and you're excited?
One up? No, I'm not excited about it. Listen, they opened one up. There's one in Lancaster. It's been there forever. I don't think it's good at all. The line went from Popeye's, which is where the movie theater used to be behind Wendy's.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Popeye's, it went down past Harbor Freight, down past Alabrije, down past like the front of Wendy's.
What?
And then and then
ridiculous.
And then on to Fifth Street and curled up around the corner up to like fucking the what used to be Taco Bell there.
Just for people to get
for fucking 3 weeks.
We had talked about that before, about how
it's not
even that good of chicken.
Right. So I drive
over. I'm a Bojangles man.
I'm a Redner's fried chicken man. It's the best fried chicken there is, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't. The closest I like KFC, and the closest KFC to where I live is 15 minutes away either direction.
Yeah.
And so it takes me like 30 to 40 minutes to go get it and come back.
Plus the 15-minute argument.
Right, exactly. It takes forever.
Then you end up throwing the food away because you're so pissed off when you get home.
Wasn't even fucking worth
the wrong thing. Yeah. But no, but I go, like, I have a Giant like 2 minutes down the road, and they do fried chicken in there or whatever, and it's like just as good.
Redner's is, in my opinion, well, we're getting it for this Carter's birthday party. It's you can get like a tray of 40
right
for like $50, and it's these, you know, fried chicken breasts.
They don't have the fixins though, like Bojangles.
No, but you can get Redner's coleslaw. I mean. Mm.
No dirty rice.
No, there's no dirty rice. There's also no dirty floors like Bojangles has.
Well, you don't go inside.
Well, that's where the flavor comes from.
Hey, listen, I worked there. Okay?
That same flavor probably from the time you worked there.
That's what makes it good, those biscuits.
Nothing like Joey's Only.
Biscuits. Joey's Only was clean, crystal clean.
How much food we could eat, though, while we were working. It was so good.
How long was that open for?
Not long.
Yeah, a couple of years.
Casey and I worked there from the time we were old enough to work to the time we both worked at Weiss.
Is that why it went out of business?
It could be.
There's a lot of us that worked at Weiss Market.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I ran that place. And I only worked there for 6 months.
You didn't.
No.
Tammy with the blue eye.
I feel like.
No, but what I mean is because of who my grandfather was, I got away with anything I wanted to. That's
possible. He was a bigwig there, right?
My grandfather was like the head of the meats department for all of Weiss Markets. So like he has stories about, and my mom has stories about when my mom was a kid, whatever, they would get on private planes and they'd fly to Wisconsin. My grandfather would be picking out cattle for Weiss to, you know, like all kinds of
some of those
up
buyers,
and up kind of things.
Like Devin and I met the purchaser that buys, that. Well, this is a couple of years ago. He probably doesn't have his job anymore. Boscov's landscape plant guy. All he did was travel around and buy plants for Boscov's.
Wow.
He took Devin and I, never met us before. We were drinking in at Mike's. He was the only other one in there. I just started bullshitting with him. It was a total casual, like, oh, I got nothing else to do tonight. You want to go out to dinner? You know, my treat. Sure. So we went. I forget where we went, but, I mean, he paid for everything. It was totally normal and casual. Not creepy or anything. But, like... Dude had more fucking money than
you know. My grandfather, I mean,
all he did was fucking buy plants. Right. He made no, you know, wasn't quiet about it. Like, I don't do shit.
Yeah.
I just fucking buy plants.
Well, my grandfather, like I said, my grandfather was in charge of all of meats of all of Weiss Markets. He worked out of Sunbury. I guess that was the headquarters for them or whatever. Yeah. But so when I applied for Weiss Markets, I did the paperwork, whatever, and handed in. I got home. By the time I got home, there was a phone call that said I was hired. And I was like, what the fuck? It's been an hour. You know, that's like crazy.
That's the meat guys.
Yeah. Grandkid, yeah. But like, and I didn't like take advantage of it, but at the same time, I didn't give a shit if I got fired. Or whatever. So
give
like,
him the golden.
You guys know, well, like you guys know how I am, right? So like, there are situations where like I don't know if I told the story before or not, but I was working the express lane, right? At the cashier, and this guy came in.
I remember.
Do you remember this? Did I tell this story before?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
With the
donut.
Yeah, yeah.
Slash bear claw. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You hear this?
I may not have listened to that episode.
Okay. So like so I'm working the express lane and they gave us at the time like a book with pictures in it for like certain, so like the bakery items that, you know, the donut is 30 cents, but like the bear claw is 40 cents. You know what I mean? So this guy came up and all he was buying was like a bear claw or something. And I ring it up and I'm like, you know, 40 cents or whatever. And he was like, no, that's a donut. I said, no, this is a bear claw. 40 cents, and he's like, no, Jeff, or whatever, and he flicked my name tag, right? And I fucking lost it. I said, listen here, guy, you know, I was like, this is a fucking bear claw, and I showed him the picture and everything else, and he's like, no, that's a donut. I said, well, now you're not buying it, and I threw it. I just took it, and I threw it up and over my shoulder, and there was, like, in the corner there was the office area, like, it was had no ceiling, whatever, it was just, like, some higher walls.
This is the one on Fifth Street, right?
Yeah, okay. Which isn't there anymore. Right. But, so I just threw it over my shoulder, which it landed right up in there where the manager was sitting, whatever. She came, she got it, she's like, what's going on? And I said, this asshole is trying to tell me that this is, you know, this is a donut, whatever, when it's clearly a bear claw, whatever. And he ended up just, like, storming off or whatever, but, like, I never got in trouble or anything, but, you know. But I lost my shit. You don't fucking come up to me trying to pull one over on my ass. I don't care if it's 10 cents. You know? There are rules,
that's
Casey.
Right, that's right.
I had my fill of shit there when the lady was bitching about 5 cents on her double coupon day. Goodbye. I don't need this shit.
Yeah. When I quit there, They very quickly they had moved me to a stock boy. Right, so
people, not don't let Jeff interact with people.
Yeah, I'm not a very good people person. Well, I'm a great people person if as long as you're following the fucking rules and do what I tell you.
As long as you do
as long as I'm in charge. Yeah. So I was working stock whatever, and somebody didn't show up for their shift, one of the cashiers, and so they had me and another guy, a stock guy, like go to the cashiers for a few hours, or whatever, till these next shift came in or whatever. No problem. Except that the people that were there to be a cashier, they had them at like lanes 9 and 10, and they put me and the other stock guy at 4, 3, and 4, which because those are the closest ones, for whatever reason, everyone always lines up on those. Like old people just wait in line at 3 and 4. They don't care if there's open registers down the way. They will just wait there. So I was pissed because I'm like, I'm here
old
as a backup. Yeah.
Old people in gym.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was pissed because I'm like a backup, but they got me like being the head cashier here, whatever. You know, it's like, put that fucking bitch over here so I can go stand over there and do nothing. You know, that isn't fair. So I was freaking pissed. And the guy with me, we were both like just bitching the whole time. We're ringing people up like right in front of their faces. We didn't care. We were bitching about it. And at one point I was just like, you know what? Fuck, I'm in the middle of ringing up this old lady, this poor old lady. You know, God bless her, but because like right in the middle of ringing her up, I'm like, fuck this. And I just pulled my drawer out and walked away.
She's still standing
She's
there.
Still waiting to ring up her stuff. Yeah.
That's because it's four. Yeah. It's the best aisle.
Oh my God. I've had to clean up shit in the aisles. Yeah. You never knew people could just shit in grocery stores until you worked there.
You know that now with YouTube.
That's true.
Yeah, that probably would have been when I walked out. The shit cleaning, not the old lady. Yeah.
Two different times we had to clean up shit. One, there was a woman who came charging into the back stock area looking for a bathroom. She's holding her stomach, whatever, and she goes in the bathroom. She does her thing. She comes out, and me and the other guy are like, what the fuck? And we go to walk over there, and we found these little nuggets on the floor leading to the bathroom. And you get inside there.
Hershey Kisses.
When we opened the door to the bathroom, thank God it was all tiled with a drain in the center.
Nuggets. They wouldn't be nuggets because
there was
Russian like that.
But they were
little Hershey Kisses.
Little Hershey Kisses, yes.
Little sploosh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they didn't taste like Hershey Kisses, but. But it was, she made a mess in the bathroom. Like, I don't even think she used the toilet, you know? So we had to hose the whole thing down. And then the other time, I just checked in or whatever. Showed up for work. I'm walking up to the front counter, and as we're walking down the main aisle, or whatever, that has like the toothpaste and shit, there's like a brown blob in the middle of the aisle. We're like, yeah, toothpaste and shit aisle. So like, what is this?
Shit.
So we walk to the front.
Sorry, that fucking toothpaste, Jeff.
So we walk to the front counter, and we're like, yo, I think someone's shitting that aisle. You better get someone to clean that up, right? And they were like, well, you two can decide who has to do it. Of course, we flipped a coin, and I lost. So I had to go get a bucket. So I went in the back. I got a bucket and bleach and all that stuff. And I bring the bucket and bleach out, and it's gone. And I'm like, good. Someone else cleaned it up. Whatever. That's fantastic.
So
I go to start walking. And I see there's a brown streak all the way through aisles 1 through 6. And you could see all the aisles that somebody stopped at with their cart. Somebody hit it with their cart and drug it throughout the entire fucking store. Yeah. So, needless to say, that whole store got the cleaning of a lifetime.
I'm done. You got to go, huh?
Yeah.
From Casey, Jeff, Sam, and myself, don't forget to check out Bobby Blaze on Twitter.
BobbyBlaze744.
Check out Sam on Twitter.
That's at The Real SCAV, and the podcast is at Wrestling Dorks.
One of these days, I'm going to check out Twitter, but not today. I'll let you take care of that. What's ours?
Chicken Duck Pod.
Okay.
Go to chickenduckpod.com. Get all your info. Sign up for the giveaway.
Ooh, nine,
nine
more,
Kyle.
We're getting there, Kyle. Buy some pins in the meantime. It's been emotional. Goodbye.